Hey folks, how are you today? I hope you're doing fantastic. So my guest today is Dave Tabler, and he is a prostate cancer survivor, but it took two go-rounds, and he's going to explain what had happened the first time around and why he went in for second surgery. And also, during that second surgery, he had a near-death experience. You'll hear us refer to that as an NDE. So we're going to talk about that, but there are some other important things that we talk about. We talk about what it is to be a survivor, and also some of the things that have changed in Dave's life post-surviving. Does that make sense? Well, it just means really that, you know, some of the changes. Why are people so motivated to do something after a tragedy? Why do people gather around after a tragedy? There's so many things that happen around a tragedy, but you know what? We need to do these things that we're going to be talking about before anything tragic happens. There's also a lot of stigma or embarrassment that comes along with having a colonoscopy, but it's really important for everyone to have that done. You know, at a certain age, you need to do it on a regular basis. I'm not a doctor, not a physician or anything like that, but you know, whatever regular basis may mean to you. Is it 3 years, is it 5 years, or did you do it early enough to where you don't have to do it for 10 years? But that's something else that we talk about. So please have a listen to your doctor, and don't be embarrassed. If you are a pet owner, please be a responsible pet owner and have your pets spayed or neutered. All right, let's do it.
Thanks for being here. I mean, it's always great having guests on to talk about their experiences, especially when so many folks have similar experiences and or they don't want to talk about it because of stigma and other things. But you...
Oh, is that a big point? That is a really big point that I ran into. I had no idea I was going to hit that wall.
Yeah.
But it's a big wall.
It is. And I don't know why there's such a stigma. You know, it's... Again, it's something that many of us have experienced, but many of us don't share that. And if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about, you went through surgery, but the surgery went wrong, and then you had a near-death experience.
Right. Yeah, so the surgery, so I had prostate cancer, and the doctor said, oh, you know, we got it early, and it's something that's very common. A lot of people have it. And, you know, since we caught it early, it shouldn't be anything very complex. And I had been out of the hospital, I guess, for about a week or so, and I started noticing that I couldn't urinate. I felt full, and yet nothing was coming out in the catheter bag. And I thought, this is weird. And finally, my abdomen just started expanding and expanding. And I thought, okay, I've got to go back into the hospital. And so when I get back, they rushed me into surgery right away again without, you know, any commentary. And it was only later that I discovered that there had been a leak in the plumbing when they reattached all the tubes after the surgery, you know, my urethra and so forth. There was a leak, and so my abdomen was filling up with urine. And later, much later, the doctor told me, you were about 3 hours from dying. So anyway, when I was on the surgery table that second time, that's when I had the NDE, and I was under deep, heavy morphine. And this is the part where the stigma comes in. When you try to explain this to people later, they're like, you know, you were under morphine, you didn't know what you were experiencing, you were just drugged up. Or they say, well, it was just a dream. Come on, you know, we all have bizarre dreams. But I know from my own reality that I've never had a dream like that, and I've never had one since then. The visuals during my NDE were kind of like what you experience when you're under a black light. You know, everything kind of glows. It's not like normal lighting. And so it was that kind of a thing where everything was just very hyper bright, hyper clear. Yeah. There was a real clarity that you don't see in normal dreams. And I think everybody has NDEs that are slightly different. You know, you hear about people seeing the white light, the tunnel at the white light, and being in an operating table and hovering above their body and looking down, seeing the body. I didn't have either of those experiences. What I experienced was, and I think this is common, I found myself in what I could only say would be like a solar system setting, you know, the stars all around, and this loving presence over my left shoulder. And, you know, depending on whether you're religious or not, you could say, well, that was an angel, that was God, that was whatever it was, but just this incredible loving presence. And so I knew wherever the heck we were going, we were going to be fine. It was going to be all right. And unlike bodily travel, where you're zooming along, you know, in a car or airplane or whatever, there was the sense of forward motion without any feeling of bodily movement. You know, we were just suddenly there. We were just closer up to wherever we were going next. And what happened was it appeared to me that there was something akin to what I would describe as Saturn's rings. You know, this kind of this fuzzy, hazy thing off from a distance. And as you got closer, there were little details going on within the fuzzy ring. And this ring was kind of like a figure eight. The puzzle where it goes back on itself, like an eight.
Oh gosh, an infinity is the only sign I could think of, but
like an infinity loop. That'll work. I'll think of the name of the puzzle later. But you do it as a kid. You take pieces of paper and you tape them together, and then it's all on one side. Anyway, an infinity loop is a good description. And as we get closer into the infinity loop, I saw little tiny figures of humans. And it reminded me of those bobble figures that you see on the backs of cars and on the little spring heads. And these were people of all different races, but no race, of all different ages, but no age. And they were doing what people everywhere forever have done. So here's a couple making love. Here's a farmer plowing a field. Here's a woman giving birth. Here's someone dying. But the commonality in all of these scenes was that they were all stuck. They couldn't move off of their space. It was kind of like iron filings. You know, there was some magnetic force that was holding that figure in that spot. And so it occurred to me later that this was probably sin or, you know, our own karma that we put out there that holds us where we think we can't break past it, even though we can. But, you know, we believe that we're stuck in that one spot. And that was the end of it. After that, I woke up, and that was that. I had one other similar dream, I think later that day or maybe the following day when I was still under the drugs. And that one was more personal. That was kind of an instruction of, you need to get this personal relationship cleared up in your life before you can move on. And that was it. That, you know, I don't want to go into the details, but, you know, this was a person that I had not made the peace with and that I really needed to. And, you know, we realize as we're close to dying that, oh my God, why didn't I ever patch up things with this person, that person, you know, this loved one? Why did I stupidly let things go? And that was the instruction from that dream, is don't put those things off.
You know,
clarify with people.
I think our brains are an incredible storage unit, a learning computer, all of the above. And I do believe that when we are put into that situation, somehow, some way, it forces us to tap into a lot of forgotten memories, thoughts, whatever it is. And like you said, that second dream was a personal one. It all of a sudden brought up these things mm-hmm. that you need to do before it's your time. But thank Correct. Goodness it was not your time.
Yes, I'm very glad.
We would not be here.
We would not.
I want to take it a step back, but then also I want to ask you what this did for you personally that may have motivated you to do things. But taking a step back about the mm-hmm. prostate cancer, it's important, I think, for people to get checkups. So I want to ask you, what made you go and get, whether it was a checkup or whether it's some sort of pain, what put you to that motion to go to the doctors?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this is really a question that is crucial for men to understand, because a lot of my friends are like, you know, I'm a young guy. I don't need to mess with that. I've got plenty of time left. My mother had breast cancer, and I was told when I was 40 going for a checkup that there is a direct genetic connection between men getting prostate cancer who are sons of women who have had breast cancer. So from that point on, I was like, okay, every 3 or 4 years, boom. And that's why they caught it early, because I was just really careful after that. But I was not familiar with that connection prior to that. And as I say, a lot of men just think, oh, I'm in great health, I'm 40, what, you know, come on, I'll deal with this later.
Yeah.
Well, later comes sooner than you think.
It does. And it's certainly unexpected. So that's interesting that you said that there's that correlation between women, moms with the breast cancer, and then the son, prostate cancer. So I've had two friends who have passed of prostate cancer, and you do need to catch prostate cancer early. That's important.
Yeah, and I think a lot of men, you know, part of involved in the checkup with prostate cancer is that little finger up your butt. And a lot of guys are like, oh, no, I don't want some doctor, you know, forget it. There's a real pride it's false pride. You know, these are doctors. They're not trying to hit on you. It's just a non-issue. But a lot of my friends, a lot of guys I've met over the years, you know, really kind of get into this blustery macho thing. So unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know, these are doctors. They're just doing what they got to do.
Yeah, don't fear that five-letter word, probe. You know, it's...
yeah.
But you're right, absolutely right about that. A lot of us men, there is that, whether it be embarrassment or that you're not doing that to me, that kind of thing. But this is your health, this is your life. So it's...
Right.
Go out there and get a checkup. Get your physical, get all that. But with that aside, you know, your NDE, which is your near-death experience, you've come through, your health is good now?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been cancer-free now for, I guess, about 5 years. And, you know, of course, it could come back at any time, but you just pay a lot closer attention once you've been down that path once.
Yeah. And this is the other interesting thing is, folks out there, don't take me wrong when I say this, or don't get mad, but I'm going to say two things. One is, it's sad, but not sad when someone you know passes and people gather at the funeral. And then you go, hey, I haven't seen you in a long time. I haven't seen you in a long time. That's the sad part, is it takes something like that to bring people together or bring friends together. So don't let that happen. Reach out. You know, as you're saying, Dave, that second part that you said was a personal insight, a personal dream, told you to reach out to someone. So my thing is,
absolutely,
don't let a tragedy reach out to somebody. If you want, please reach out. That's number one. Number two is, often the person that goes through the tragedy, when they come out on the other side, it's this sometimes a rush moment to, I got to do this, I got to do this. Or other times it's an epiphany of, I've been meant or a task to do something, or it motivates you. And you definitely have been motivated. So what was that motivation? Where did it take you?
Yeah, so this motivation was kind of a pickup from my early 20s. In my early 20s, as soon as I got out of college, I did photography on a book about the Civil War, which was fascinating. I got to travel all around the South, and I had two authors that I was working with, and we met some really fascinating people. I met Beverly DuBose, who is the scion of the Coca-Cola family, and he literally had one of those mansions that you drive for a mile with the Spanish moss on either side, and it opens up, and there you are with Tara, right out of Gone with the Wind. This guy had literally built a private museum on his property, and he had, you know, Stonewall Jackson's uniform and all, just an amazing thing. So I met a lot of people like that. Tom Dickey was James Dickey's brother, the guy that wrote Deliverance, the movie Deliverance, another big Southern collector. So an amazing experience. And I thought I was set for life. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to move up to New York City and really set the world on fire with my photography. Well, I got up to New York City and discovered that it costs a lot of money to set up a photo studio. And if you don't have a photo studio, then you better have a lot of connections, you know, in the fashion world or in the news world or what have you, which I didn't. And so I really got sidetracked. I had to take a series of pay-the-rent jobs. And so really, I kind of put that dream on hold for a long time until we came up to 40 years later, 30 years later, with the cancer. And once I had the cancer, then I thought, okay, you know, this is something that I always look fondly back on. I've been wanting to do more books on history, and now is the time. You know, I don't have another, I may not have another 30 years. I might, but I might not. You know, there was this sense of urgency that really came into my life, fell into my lap. And so my current three books are about the history of Delaware, where I'm living currently.
I just want folks who are watching or listening to understand what we're talking about here. We started talking about the NDE, the near-death experience, and how it motivates you, wakes you up to pursue your passions or pick up from where you may have left off years earlier. So that's what Dave and I are talking about, really, is after that near-death experience, you know, where did it guide you, if that's a correct word to use, in your life and what to do? Because this, to me, is your second chance, really. So if you've come that close, this is your second chance, right?
It truly is. It truly is, yeah. It truly is. And, you know, one of the great things about writing history is that there are so many fun stories. You know, when a lot of people retire to Delaware, just like I did, because the taxes are low and the cost of living in general is low, and yet it's very sophisticated. You know, you get a lot of the amenities that you would get in Philadelphia or Washington, D.C. or New York. So it's a really nice blend. But one of the things that people always encounter when they move here is Scrapple. Do you know what Scrapple is?
How come I've heard that term? But give it to me, Dave.
Yes, I know. That's exactly how most people react when they hear about this term. So Scrapple is a fried sausage, and it's because it's a unique blend of ingredients. It's basically any part of the pig that doesn't otherwise have a name, plus a binder, plus spices. So that's what Scrapple is. And when you describe that to people elsewhere in the country, they go, blech, why would anyone want to eat that? Well, so that's where the history part comes in. About a quarter of the population in Delaware is German extraction. And the Germans came over here right after the 30 Years' War, in the early 1700s. And one of the things they brought with them was this fried pork. Well, they didn't call it Scrapple. A lot of people think, oh, okay, so it's called Scrapple because it has parts of the pig scraps. That's not the real reason. The real reason is the German immigrants who came over called it Panhas, which translates as pan rabbit. And so when you would go to your butcher, you know, there were bakers and butchers and so forth. So you go to your butcher and you would purchase a slice of Panhas. Well, the Middle German term for slice was Kreppel. And Kreppel is still a word in modern German. It means donut. But what is a donut if not a slice of dough? So anyway, Panhas Kreppel, over decades and then centuries, got morphed into Scrapple and Scrapple. And if you look, and I came across this initially, I was looking on some other topic, and I kept coming across the word Scrapple in quotes in 1860s Delaware newspapers, and I thought, now why on earth would they put that in quotes? And the answer is because it was a bastard word from Panhas Kreppel.
Wow. All right.
So that's where Scrapple comes from.
I have to make a comment, and this is the one thing about whether you had a near-death experience or not, but learning something and going into depth, and then the ability to share it with somebody else, to me, that's an amazing gift, because where else would I learn about Scrapple, you know, other than right here from you, Dave? Because
whether you wanted to or not.
That's right. Yeah, there's every single time I go out and get a sausage or something, I'm going to go, what's in here? What is this? Are you sure this is not a Scrapple? But no, this is the other amazing thing about pursuing your passions, because now you have this, you're sharing this, and I'm learning from you. So thank you on that part.
You know, I think one of the other things that comes across as you think later about your NDE or about an NDE is you start to realize that each of us is given a unique gift. And, you know, we've heard that before, and you kind of roll your eyes and go, yeah, sure. But once you start to wrap your head around that and accept that that is the truth of the matter, you realize, okay, if I have a unique gift, what is that gift, number one? And number two, what do I need to do to share that gift with the world? And I think once you set aside the egotism that is implied by that phrase, because initially you think to yourself, oh, what a conceited son of a bitch to think that, you know, you and you alone have this gift. But we do, in fact, each have unique gifts. And I found this when I started talking to other historians in Delaware, and I realized, wait a minute, we all know this story, but you tell it very differently from the way that I tell it. And that's when I realized, okay, you can have the exact same amount of data provided to two people, and they will both interpret it completely different and completely uniquely.
Yeah, You're absolutely right about that. That's that greatness and uniqueness of being able to interpret it ourselves, give the story. I'm going to pick up on the history of it, all the information. I may be thinking about something else different than the guy next to me from the story that you told. So I encourage everybody, don't wait till your near-death experience. It's, you know, really start pursuing things right now and going after those things that you really love. And you actually have two books out, and you have a third one that you're currently working on, right?
Correct. Yeah, so the first one is called Delaware Before the Railroads, mm-hmm. and that talks about, you know, the colonial era. And then the one that we were just talking about a minute ago with the Scrapple, that talks about the 19th century. And that's when Delaware really started to come into its own, with Wilmington rising up as a major city. And then finally, the third book will be about the 20th century. And that's where DuPont really starts to influence the state down to every last little detail. DuPont got their start here in 1802 as a gunpowder manufacturer. A lot of people don't realize that. They think, oh, DuPont Chemicals. And that's true today. But for a long, long time, they were mainly known for gunpowder. In fact, they were the main supplier of the Union Army during the Civil War. They were the one of the major suppliers during the Mexican War and then also during the Spanish-American War. So, I mean, right along the 19th century, they were a gunpowder. And then in the early 20th century, that's when they started looking to diversify. But a lot of people don't know. They might know DuPont, but they might not be aware that Delaware is where nylon was born, where Kevlar was born, Teflon. You know, these are all DuPont products. Gore-Tex is a spinoff.
You know, it's funny. I would have never known, but then I'm going, well, yeah, okay, so the colonies that came over, of course they invented Kevlar. They needed protection. But that's where my head went.
It repelled arrows.
Right.
It repelled arrows and spears.
Natural progression, you know, we had to come up to this point. But I just wanted to take a step back again with your prostate cancer, your near-death experience and things like that. And we talked about the stigma both of getting tested if you're men for prostate cancer, but also about the near-death experience and sharing your experiences. Did you feel an importance to share the experience as well with your friends and for all of us? I mean,
yes. So initially, when I came down off of the drugs and got out of the hospital, I thought this is life changing. And of course, as the person experiencing it, it is life changing. And so the nurse that was attending me said, oh, you should come by my church. You know, I think you'd like it. And so forth. I thought this will be a great opportunity. I'll witness my experience there. And so I came over and I talked to the pastor of her church, and he said, well, let's have a chat. And basically, he took me into his office and kind of steered me away from telling my story to the congregation. I thought, well, okay, I'm not a member of his congregation. I'll go with a church that is more familiar with me. I went to my sister's church, and she said, oh, you can't do that. And I thought, well, why not? But she said, no, it's just not appropriate. So people think, oh, you were under morphine. So, of course, you know, you're going to have a drug-addled hallucinatory fantasy, or you weren't in your right mind. You were ill. You know, you don't know. You can't really vouch for what your mind was going through at that time. There's all kinds of reasons that people come up with. And so it's very discouraging initially. You know, people kind of look at, and people who don't know you well just think, oh, geez, this guy's nuts. You know, the guy's completely loopy. So it took me until now to really be willing to talk about this publicly. It's only recently that I've realized, wait a minute, there are a lot of people that have gone through this. And as I've seen various YouTubes and heard podcasts, I'm like, wait a minute, I went through that. I know what you're talking about. And everybody seems to have the same thing about, you know, being rejected as, this is just too crazy. You know, you don't know what you're saying.
That's a good word, rejected. You were initially willing to share that story, but others want to hear it or did not want you to talk about it for whatever fear that they had, whether it be disbelief or whatever it might be. But I'm glad that people like yourself persisted to share the story, because like you said, you had that moment of listening and hearing others talk about it and said, you know what? I went through the same thing.
It builds a community. And then you don't feel so isolated, and you feel, then you also feel encouraged to come forward and, as I said earlier, share your unique gift with the world. You know, I might not have done that if I hadn't realized, hey, there are other people that are, that have been pushed along, that have been nudged along like this.
Yeah, and this could be with anything, not just your personal near-death experience. Something reached out to you to give you a message. If you hold on to that message is never going to be sent. So, you know, if that, even if that happens too, share it. Somebody might go, that's really weird. I had a dream the other day about something like that. Again, this is really fascinating, hearing your story about your near-death experience. Just before we really close out, I just want to go all the way back to the beginning of our conversation about the importance of having your checkup. I don't want to just say for specifically for men, but men and women, but specifically for men, you know, prostate cancer and whatever else, and your near-death experience. Can you wrap it up in a nutshell again, the importance of, you know, making sure that you're healthy and also not letting a stigma keep you down? Because if it did, you wouldn't be sharing all the things that you're sharing with us right now.
Yeah, I think that women are a lot more willing to go to health checks than men are, just because they've been initiated into mammography, you know, early, as, you know, young teens and young women. With men, there's no rite of passage that's comparable to that. And so really, it's not until about your 40s where it starts to become an issue. And a lot of men who are just at 40 get lulled into a false sense of security. Hey, I go to the gym 5 times a week. You know, I'm eating my broccoli. I'm doing it all right. Things feel great. I can't imagine what could be wrong. But cancer sneaks up on you. And so you have to nip it in the bud. Yeah. And that's where regular checkups can really be beneficial. And you'll be glad you did. You know, it gives you, it will often give you a second lease on life. So many men don't catch it in time, and by the time they discover it, they smack their forehead and say, "Oh, if only." So it's well worth it to start at age 40 and just follow the doctor's advice from then on. Maybe once every 5 years, maybe every 3 years, but whatever it is, you know, stick with it. It's like getting a vaccination or, you know, taking your vitamins. You just do it.
Preventive medicine. And don't wait till you can't walk and then, you know, find a way to the doctors. So,
correct.
Your books are available on Amazon, and you have a website. Are there pre-sales or anything like that available for your upcoming book?
Not yet, but they will be for pre-sale both on Amazon, also Barnes & Noble, on Kobo, on Apple, on Google Play, you know, everywhere that... that fine books are sold. Okay. So they're pretty easy to get hold of.
And folks can go to your website, get more information. You have a blog and things like that at your website. Dave Tabler, or is my saying Tabler correct, or is it Tabler?
Yes. Okay. No, it's Tabler. I get Tabler all the time, but it is Tabler.
So Dave Tabler, so just DaveTabler.com. So,
correct.
Dave, this has been a fascinating story. I mean, a story that you shared about yourself. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be able to talk about things close to my heart.